Good morning. It has been a while. I must say, I almost feel bashful. But I praise God that I am able to think again, speak again. It's a really there was a time there I wasn't sure it was going to happen. As far as the sermon length goes, I don't think you'll mind. It's going to be a little bit longer, but it should be interesting, I think. As far as the bulletin goes, Keith, I think I won this one. As far as your comments go, as far as what the sermon's about, we've got a little running competition to where I don't tell him what's in the sermon. He tries to figure out to put in the little blurb at the bottom. I think I kind of won this round, but we'll see. You may debate later. I don't know. It's probably a way to rationalize your winning, but anyhow. Yes. Dawning of the morning. Where are we at here? There we go. I was going to say, confused. Waymarks is the title of the sermon. And it was interesting. I was thinking about waymarks and what they entailed and where we are in history. And I found it very interesting to find that it seems like when there's a crisis, people seem to sit up and pay a little more attention than when things seem to be just kind of the status quo. Isn't that correct? People sharpen their hearing, sit up and take a look-see. Over and over again in the Bible, and Clifford read one instance of it, but over and over again specifically from our master, we are told to watch, to watch. We are told that Jesus is going to come as a thief. We are told that if the man of the house had known what time the thief was going to break in, he wouldn't have been caught napping, right? I mean, I'm paraphrasing heavily there, of course. But waymarks. Waymarks are an interesting thing. Dawning of the morning. There's a scripture in Romans 13, and it reads as follows. And that knowing the time, that now it is high time to waken out of sleep, for now is our what? Salvation nearer than when we believed. The night is far spent, and the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Jesus told a parable of the 10 virgins. We know it. Clifford just read it, but I'm going to go over it again. He says, and then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all did what? Slumbered. And slept. The wise and the foolish, correct? Both slumbered and slept. Seems to be a besetting condition with God's people. You remember the disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane just before Jesus was arrested. What were they doing? All slumbering and sleeping. Seems to be a common failing. It says, though, and at midnight there was a cry made, behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. Watch, therefore, it concludes, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. There's a question here. Watch what? I ask this question of God. It's a good question, isn't it? We have Matthew 24, where we're told about wars, rumors of wars, right? Famines, pestilences, earthquakes in diverse places, distress of nations, all these things. Have they been going on at all throughout history? Yeah, it can get a little bit, Lord, what do I watch for? Right? Because obviously the command to watch is given to us so that we might know when the return, the actual literal return of our Savior is going to happen, right? And yet there's been a lot of wars, a lot of rumors of wars, lots of famines. Now mind you, have there been more lately than in recent decades? It seems like it, right? It seems like it. And it can get, okay, yeah, that's great. Watch what? But, there are waymarks. You know, what's a waymark? I thought I'd get you a handy definition of a waymark. It's right there on the screen. It says it's a noun, a symbol or signpost marking the route of a footpath. And you see in the background there, you see the little signboards, the arrows pointing, Tokyo, 2,000 miles or whatever it is. I'm sure it's farther than that here, 8,000 miles, whatever it is. There are different signs And so there are different signs to watch for when it comes to the return of Jesus as well. There really are. The most annoying sign I've ever seen when I was traveling with our children was this sign. Anybody else? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Look at the sign. You know how to count. And then sit there for the next 10 minutes asking God for repentance for being impatient with your child. Yeah, well, there's mileage signs. Are we there yet? And it's a good question. You know, how long, O Lord? You know, that question's asked in Revelation by the souls under the altar, right? How long? Because it sure seems to me and to many others that it's been going on for a long time now. You know, you having bad things happen in the world, yes, but how long? How much further is it? And so I would like to take a look at some waymarks that are not having to do with the other signs given, but specifically with how long is it, Lord? Now, no, don't worry, Troy's not about to stand up here and time set, okay? Not going to do that. Not going to do it. But the waymarks I want to look at today are waymarks that tell us how close we are to the second coming of Jesus. Close is a relative term, isn't it? With God, a day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as what? A day. So if God says, well, it'll be 6 days from now, you're not quite sure what he's talking about. You know, for us, that's an eternity. But not with God. So waypoint number one is found in Revelation 17. Now, I was thinking it would be nice to give you guys an update on Revelation 17. Do you remember I preached 3 sermons on this? I thought, well, that was just a little while ago.
January
22. Yeah. I was like, oh, how time flies when you get old. Or older, right? I was like, it's been too soon. And then, you know, because I always go to God at the beginning of the week that I'm to preach. Say, what do you want me to say? This came back. I was like, well, it's not this bent. It was just yesterday I did that. Well, ends up in January, it's going to be 2 years. Things have happened, brothers and sisters. Have you been watching? Okay, well, Revelation 17, there is a thesis there that says that there are going to arise 10 kings. For 1 hour, they would give their power and their strength to the wicked people of this world. It is prefaced by a woman who's been riding that beast, controlling it through its heads. And we went into who those heads might be. But it seems like at the very end of this world's history, in the last hour, the status quo is upset. I was thinking about these 10 horns that should arise. If you were riding a horse, and 10 horns arose on that horse, you might be an uncomfortable position to be in. It's uncomfortable enough on a horse, saddle or no saddle. But you get 10 horns arising, and in Revelation 17 speaks of the discomfiture of the woman, of her losing her seated position and being destroyed by those 10 horns. has that started to happen or no? It's a good question. Because Revelation 17 says that there are going to arise political leaders that are going to give their power not to the establishment. Anybody hear that word around lately, the establishment? If you've been watching at all, you hear it a lot, the Washington establishment. Anybody heard that phraseology? Yeah? Or the political establishment. The powers that be that have been established. And that's what's been going on while she's been riding this beast for 3 heads. Or 2 heads, sorry. So, the establishment. Is there a rise in these political leaders that were foretold that would give their power, their authority, and their strength to the people? Is that happening? Have you been watching? That's another question. I'm not saying it to shame you. It's just a question. We probably should be. Now, I will give you this. Watching politics is a horrible thing to do. It makes for really strange, sad, twisted, miserable people. At least from what I've seen. Okay? But God said to watch. But we should watch. What are we watching for specifically? Has the political landscape in not just America... Funny how you're rather myopic when it comes to what we look at. If you're in your country, you pay attention to what's going in your own country. But the number 10 in Revelation 17, the 10 kings, is symbolic, I believe, of the entire creation. the whole world, in other words. That all over the world, there were going to arise rulers that would give their power and strength not to the woman, where up to this point they had been in bed with her, fornicating with her, but would give them instead to the peoples that she rode, that she sat on, as it happened. Well, there have been a lot of things happening in the last 2 years in this regard. And I'd like to go over, I can't go over all of them, but it might be give you some seeds to what to go take a look at. Right-wing populism. The rise of national populism is happening all over this world. Everywhere you look. And I will give you some examples of it here in a minute. That right-wing populism is also called national populism and right-wing nationalism. In our news cycles, it's basically just called right-wing, being right-wing, or far-right is maybe another name. Anybody heard that term, far-right? All right, it's speaking of people, that politicians that don't fit in to the Washington establishment or to the German establishment or to the French establishment or to the Dutch established political order. They don't play ball with them. They are not going along with the program. They don't stick to the formula. They're doing something different, and they are driven by a grassroots movement. And that grassroots movement is also called the people. You know how it's supposed to work with a government, with a democratic republic? The people are to elect their representatives. The representatives are supposed to represent the people that elected them, correct? Anybody seen that happen anytime lately, anywhere? Seems to be a joke, doesn't it? Because the people elect their representatives and the representatives represent their party. Is that not true? But there's a switch happened. If you've been watching, you'll have seen that there's a switch has taken place. And I'll get into it in a minute when we deal with what's going on in the U.S. But there is something happened in the Congress that has never happened before in the history of the United States of America. But we'll get to that in a minute. Right-wing populism is rising all over the world. And a definition for it, it says it's a political ideology that combines right-wing politics and populist. Who makes up the populists? Who's that? It's the people, isn't it? Popular opinion, the people, what the people want. It's made up of right-wing politics and populist rhetoric and themes. Now, whoever wrote this, they weren't very sympathetic to national populism, let me tell you. But it says its rhetoric employs anti-elitist sentiments and opposition to what? It's understand to the establishment. And then Revelation 17 speaks of an establishment, doesn't it? The woman controlling the people through the heads of their government. And this rise of national populism is opposed to this establishment, to this cozy arrangement that's been made. And they're speaking or governing for whom? The common people. And it's causing a furor, a whole lot of trouble, a whole lot of it. Here's a headline: National Populism Sweeps the World. It sweeps the world. Countries with populist political powers surging to power. What in the world? That was supposed to be a bracket. Sorry, that 9's not supposed to be there. I did this PowerPoint this morning, so I didn't have a lot of time. I always do, actually. But that's how I get my thoughts together. It says that this, I'm going to show you a list, and it's by no means complete because we don't have the time. Here's a list. New Zealand. Anybody watch New Zealand during the pandemic? It was a horrible place. It's a horrible place. People were forced to inform on their neighbors. They would take your children away. It was just awful. I don't want to go into it. It was just terrible. If you were watching what was happening in New Zealand, it would just shock you. Australia, world's largest prison camp. You know? It was only worse than New Zealand because it was bigger, right? In Germany, the AfD, Alternate for Deutsch, form of government for Deutschland, I think that's what it stands for, isn't it, Brigitte? Yeah. Little right, far right-wing party for the people is all of a sudden coming out of nowhere. In fact, I heard, maybe Brigitte can correct me on this, but I heard that they're trying to outlaw it, to ban it, because it's such a threat to the established parties. Now that's dirty pool, let me tell you. The Netherlands, the BBB, you heard about the Netherlands with the farmers? Anybody hear about that, what they were doing? The shooting of the farmers where they were going to take their cattle and their land away by force for the European Union. Let me tell you something. In Europe, the European Union is in big trouble. Brussels is very, very freaked out at the moment. Guess you don't. Do you know what the papacy said about the European Union when it came into being? It said it was heaven sent. Now, I would be very suspicious of the EU based on that statement. Not only that, but the European Union, and you can look this up, had a poster made when it was being established, and it was a poster of, you'll never guess what building. The Tower of Babel. Literally used the Tower of Babel on their poster, and in the writing it said, this time we will succeed. The EU Parliament building, if you want just for fun, go take a look at it. The architecture shows an incompleted tower. That's the form of the European Union. It's in trouble. That was established by a power that rides the beast, and that is imperiled by the rise of national populism. Does it sound like Revelation 17 may be starting to come into being? Are we maybe seeing the rise of 10 kings? We carry on. Italy, of all places. They've got a firecracker of a PM down there now. And she doesn't care about the established alliances. Italy's politics are complicated. We won't go into it. But she won with an overwhelming majority of the vote because the people wanted something different than what had been going on. France, don't touch their pensions. They go to the barricades. Luxembourg, again, same idea. Canada, we haven't had an election, but when they do have an election, it's going to be a massacre of the Liberal Party. I'm not so sure it's a good thing, but it is. They are going to overthrow the established form of government up there. They are. And then we get to the United States of America. Have you been watching, brothers and sisters, what's going on in your own backyard? Now, I said earlier that something happened that has in the House of Representatives that's never happened in the history of the United States, and that is that they ousted the Speaker. Its own party has never happened before. McCarthy, you're gone. And the charge was led by the Gates Eight. Have you heard of them? Well, they are a group of representatives that are said that's enough of having this. What, and everywhere you look and everywhere you listen on in grassroots circles for American politics, they are calling the establishment in Washington the Uniparty. I'm not calling it that. People that don't know anything about Revelation 17 are saying, we have a two-party system that's actually a one-party system. But there are rising representatives that are saying, listen, no, we are going to govern the way our constituency says we should govern. We are going to do the will of the people for a change. And the Gates Eight were responsible for getting rid of McCarthy. It's never happened in the history of the United States of America, ever. Well, the drama that followed was also very interesting. I don't know if you followed. Anybody follow what happened after that? Did you? Yeah. So they thought, well, I know, we're going to get another chap in there. We got the interim speaker. And I don't know if anybody watched when he announced that McCarthy was no longer the speaker. He tapped the gavel. Did anybody see that? I'm shocked that he didn't break it. He was that angry. What was McCarthy's sin? McCarthy's sin in the eyes of the Gates Eight was that he was not governing according to the will of the people, but that he was playing ball with established Washington. And when he pounded that gavel, that he was mad. I have never seen. If you ever want to see a temper fit, you know, that would be a good thing to Google. But right after that, they came up with another gentleman's name for speaker, and what was his name again? Scalise, was it? Scalise? Was that? I thought it was Scalise or Scalas or how you say it. Anyway, they put him forward immediately. He's got to be the speaker. And you know what happened? The phone lines blew up in the Capitol. People average Joe citizen called and says, no way are you having him for speaker. If you do, we'll primary you. You know what that means? It means that even though you're the party we're voting for, we're going to send somebody up against you in the coming election, and we're going to take your seat away and give it to somebody else. Solis is not the speaker. And there was great support for him, and all of a sudden, the people start phoning, and that support disappeared. The people were making their power heard. Then they tried for the interim speaker, the same thing but worse happened again. You know, the main complaint was that he's a rhino, meaning a Republican in name only, which is just another way of saying he is in bed with the establishment, and the people will not have it. And so you're seeing a rise of politicians in the world and in our own country that are giving they're putting their influence on the side not of the establishment, but on the side of the people. Is Revelation 17 starting to come into focus? I think it is. I really think it is. And there is some freaking out going on in the international world. Have you seen this? The World Economic Forum. Everybody heard of those wonderful, loving, kind individuals? Anybody? If you've been watching it all, you have. They call them the bullies in Brussels. And they call them the EU, which is basically an organization for a one-world government. And you would think as Adventists we'd be looking for a one-world government, but if you look at Revelation 17, does it say we get a one-world government in the end? No, it says 10 kings. These various kings take their power and strength away from her that's been riding the world and give it to the people. And I could go on and on. We don't have the time. We don't have the time. So according to Revelation 17, there will be a rise of populist political powers. And it signals what? When does this happen? The last hour. Let that sink in for a minute. You know, it's interesting when you know what the word surreal means, right? It's like, I know it's happening. It's right there, but I don't believe it. Well, the more I look around, the more surreal it looks, brothers and sisters. This is actually happening, and it's happening in an avalanche. You know how avalanches start, right? Anybody who's been out on the mountains, the avalanches start small, but they get big in a hurry. It's been happening like an avalanche. So watch. Again, we are admonished to watch. Take heed. Watch and pray. For you know not when the time is. For the Son of Man is as a man taking a far journey, who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to every man his work, and commanded the porter to watch. I guess I'm a porter. I'm trying to watch and share with you what I see. Watch ye therefore, for ye know not when the master of the house cometh, at even, or at midnight, or at the cock crowing, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. And what I say unto you, I say unto who? Does that include you? Is it just the preacher man's that are supposed, you know, the evangelists are supposed to watch? Who, according to Jesus, is supposed to watch here? All of us. And what did he say would happen if we didn't watch? If we didn't watch, you might come us an hour when we think not, right? It's very important, brothers and sisters, that we watch. It's kind of hard to watch. Have you ever noticed that? It's like watching a train wreck when all your family's on board. It's hard to watch it. There's so many evil things being done. Unbelievably evil things, but we need to watch. Waypoint number two, and now this is where it gets very interesting. This one gave me chills, because there was some information that I only learned this morning, and I think it's 2 days old. But you want an immediate one. Waypoint number two, as far as how close are we to the end, is found in Daniel 11. The king of the north. Now, there's a lot of interpretations. Dennis and I have had many discussions about this. There are a lot of interpretations as to who and what the king of the north is and all of this kind of thing. And I personally, at one time, thought that the king of the north, the whole scenario with him, was what is popular with many Adventists today, and that the king of the north is the papacy. Daniel would be, you'd run down through the book of Daniel, and if you look at the interpretations in Daniel, you find that they are done in a particular format. And that's how scriptural prophecies are run. So when you look at the throne room scene, for instance, in Revelation, where it talks about four beasts, one had the head of a, you know, the face of a man, the other was an ox, and, you know, and eyes on the wings, and all these symbols. Well, there's a symbolic form of interpretation for prophecies. And it's interesting to me, and I believe, that the prophecies in the Bible either take one of the one form or another. They don't mix them. Because if you mix forms of prophecy, then you can just make anybody you want to make them. You can jump from literal to figurative, and then back to literal, and you can do whatever you want with that prophecy. Isn't that true? So God, to safeguard us poor, weak mortals' minds, has, I think, put them into either one or two categories. Daniel 11:45 reads this, "And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end and none shall help him." That's the last verse in Daniel 11. Daniel 11, I believe, looking at it, bearing in mind that God uses prophetic interpretation either as symbolical, like the little horn power, right? There was no animal that had a horn grow out of his head, knocked out the other three horns, started talking. Right? It was figurative, it was symbolic. But I believe, and the evidence within Daniel 11 is very strongly backs up this belief, that Daniel 11 is a historical continual prophecy. What do I mean when I say a historical continual prophecy? It means that it is actually based in actual events that are going to happen. The characters that are in there are shown in symbol, but the events should follow a historical continual process. In other words, you should have, the king of Greece, Alexander the Great, should die. His kingdom should be divided into four kingdoms, which were the four generals that took his kingdom after his death. One should have settled in the south. One should have settled in the north. One in the east and one in the west. Okay? That's how a historical continual prophecy it should unfold. And it is not good scholarship or practice to go down the middle of a historical continual prophecy and right in the at the end switch it to symbolic, is it? Does that make sense? You think God plays tricks with us? He said, "I don't speak in dark corners, so you can't understand me." And unfortunately, that's what has happened in the idea that the king of the north is the papacy at the end of Daniel 11, because all the way through Daniel 11, up until that point, the king of the north has been north. And that kingdom in the north was the Ottoman Empire. The Turks, as we would say. The Ottoman Turk Empire fits the description in a historical context of the king of the north to a T. And I don't know if you remember when Ken was here still. He gave a sermon on the king of Daniel 11. Do you remember that? Yes. I've looked at what I actually asked him for his research materials, and I've taken a deep look at it. It all fits perfectly. Until you get to the last bit. And he based his thesis is not based on Ken's idea. It was based, do you remember what he based it on? He based it on what the early pioneers of the Adventist Church believed Daniel 11 to mean. And everything worked so great, boom, 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 boom. They hit the Crimean War where it says, but tidings from the north and the east, what's north and east of Turkey? What is a big country over there? What's it called? Russia. But tidings from the north and east shall trouble him, therefore he shall go out with great fury to destroy and take away many. And the Crimean War hit, and man, were many destroyed. And it came right up to that point, and the last verse stopped. Because he didn't invade Israel. The Ottoman Turks did not invade Israel. They did not, and they weren't destroyed. Now, the Ottoman Empire came to an end, but it was more of a transition from empire to a republic, the Turkish Republic. Is Turkey still there? It is. No. It's still there. And so, what this did is it prompted some people to go, oh, it didn't happen. Therefore, we must have been wrong in our interpretive methods. And that's when you started to see come in the idea that the last part of Daniel 11 was symbolic. And we as Adventists understand that there's coming a Sunday law. There's going to come a time when religious powers enforce their will upon the people and force them to worship not God but man, to adhere to not God's word but man's word. And so knowing that, we think, well, that kind of fits. And so they threw it in there because the last verse didn't happen. Now my question is, has God ever backed off on something that he promised to do before? Now, I see you shaking your heads, but I think what you're saying, your thing is he doesn't lie. That's not what I meant. Has there ever been a time when God said, yep, I'm going to do this, this is going to happen, and it didn't happen? There is. One thing that springs to mind is when Israel came up to the borders of Canaan. That happened really quick, you know, zip by Sinai, grab a promise of a covenant, head over to Palestine, and we're going in. Then they sent 12 spies, and the whole thing went off the tracks. Why didn't they go in? Well, Hebrews says because they didn't believe, because of their unbelief. They couldn't enter. And so back into the wilderness for 40 years. Did they eventually enter, though? So God's promise wasn't broken. It was what? It was delayed. It was delayed. Everything that he had promised that he would do for the Israelites, he had done on time. 430 years, you will go down into Egypt and I'll bring you out. And he did. But the very last thing was delayed. So is it possible that because of our unbelief as a church, now we weren't born then. Anybody around in the late 1800s, early 1900s? Not me. I don't know. Because of our unbelief, God said, our people aren't ready. And so it stopped. But that verse is still hanging there. It's still hanging there. Hanging fire, as they would say in the army. It hasn't gone off. Well, we're going to take a look now at some history and geography. We've done some of the history. Come on there. Okay. And I, like I said here, I don't have time. But we have a prophecy that has not yet been fulfilled. Everything has been fulfilled, by the way. But one last verse. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, and he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. You see the background there? What do you see in the background of that picture? It's a bunch of tents, right? And it's the tents of an army. And if you look at this language in the original language, you get the idea that that when it says he shall plant the tabernacle of his palace between the seas, it's talking about a king on campaign. Why do kings go on campaigns? It isn't to collect wildflowers. It's for war. So it's basically saying he's going to go to war, and he's going to plant his army between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. It's very fascinating. Is it possible that this verse is about to be fulfilled?
Yep.
It's more than possible, I think. I'm going to go out on a limb, but I think it's a pretty sturdy one this morning. And I'm going to ask you to watch something for me. What's been in the news lately? The Hezbollah and Israeli war. It just a horrible, unbelievable, awful conflict where innocent people are being destroyed en masse on both sides. Just ridiculous. Modern day Turkey is the successor of the Ottoman Empire. It resides where relative to Israel? It is to the what? North. Directly to the north. Its prime minister's name is, and I cannot pronounce the first two parts of his name. I'm doing well to say Erdogan. Okay, that's his last name. President Erdogan is the prime minister of Turkey. And if Turkey is the king of the north, isn't it possible that we should maybe pay attention to what Turkey is saying about this entire thing? It's not a bad idea if the hypothesis that the king of the north is the Ottoman Empire / Turkey. It might be a good idea. So let's take a look. What is Turkey's position on this war in Israel? Well, first of all, Turkey is busy trying to do what? Have you been watching? Form an alliance with the Muslim states to help protect the Palestinians. What does that imply? On whose side is Turkey?
Not
it's not on Israel's side, is it? No, it's on Muslim side. Quick footnote. Do you know why Hamas attacked? Or at least why Al Jazeera says that Hamas attacked Israel? They attacked Israel because the Israeli people have been going up onto the Temple Mount. Now, that's nothing new. But up until lately, rabbis of the Israelis people, the Jews, have said, you can go there, but don't you dare pray up there. Because they know that the Muslims consider that the third most sacred site in all of their entire worldview. But guess what's been happening? The Jews have been going to the Temple Mount. Now, it's okay. Silent prayer is not what they're talking about. The Jews would worship at the Wailing Wall. Anybody seen video of that happening? It's rather loud. This praying on the street corners was a real thing when Jesus was talking about it, right? Well, they've been going up now onto this sacred Islamic site and praying loud. And the Muslims have just kind of been taking it. The control of the Temple Mount is not supposed to be in the hands of Israel, but in the hands of Jordan, a neutral party. Because everybody seems to understand this is a powder keg here, right? But lately, the Israelis have taken control of the mountain and are restricting access from the worshipers of Islam to that temple mosque and the Dome of the Rock. Not something that is probably a recipe for harmony. But the worst thing that happened is that an official from the Israeli government went up to that mountain, and I'm paraphrasing, you can look it up, and essentially said this temple mount should be Jewish. And lo and behold, not too long after that, what happens? There's a war. That's all I know about the origins of it, but it's significant. It's significant because that the temple there, they want to rebuild it. They've got all the furniture. They've got the red heifer. They want to rebuild the Temple of Solomon. And guess what? Evangelical Christians want them to because of the misinterpretation of Daniel. And we call it futurism. You guys know what that is, right? There's going to be a new temple built in Jerusalem. The Antichrist will then come and defile that temple, have a 3.5-year war with the Jews. And in the meantime, all us Christians get raptured out of the mess. Right? Then God comes back again and gives the world to the Christians, and the Christians rule in a temporal paradise. That's the interpretation. Do you know where that came from? Who came up with this interpretation of Daniel? I'll give you one guess. Well, Daniel actually points the finger of Antichrist hard in one direction, doesn't it? Well, entity being called Antichrist didn't like it, so they had to come up with an alternative way to interpret Daniel. And so we have preterism and futurism. That's all I'm going to say about it. This conflict, though, is not just based on territorial dispute. It's not just based on you killed our people. It's a religious war. It has its roots in religion. And Turkey is busy trying to make a coalition of the Islamic country to do something. It's and next point, at the Turkey-African Business Economic Forum, Erdogan stated that Turkey will support the Palestinian people. And this is the thing I didn't know. Did you know this? Turkey has dispatched its entire navy to Palestine. I did not know that. I went looking for a quote that I knew Erdogan had said, which triggered the thinking on this sermon, or at least on this waymark, and I found that they have sent their entire navy, and Turkey is no small fish. It's a fairly powerful nation. It has sent its soldiers and its navy to Palestine. And Erdogan made a statement, and this is telling. Erdogan's statement regarding his plans after the hospital attack in Gaza, you remember that? Horrible thing. He said this: the attack on the hospital where women, children, and innocent civilians are treated is the latest example of Israeli attacks that lack the most basic human values. I call on all humanity to take action to stop this unprecedented brutality in Gaza. So he's calling for an alliance, not just of the Muslim states, but of all humanity to stop it. You see the three dots there? He wasn't finished. He said, if not, we, Turkey, will. Now you tell me, how is the only way that Turkey is going to be stopping this? This is not a threat of we're going to take our marbles and go home. It's a threat of war. It is a threat of war. Now time for geography. Didn't know you're going to get a geography lesson today, did you? Right? I saw the eye roll over here. I did. It's a good geography, though. It won't take long. Again, with the last verse hanging fire in Daniel 11. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace, his encampment, if you will, between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. Between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Where is Gaza? I wish I had a pointer. If you're looking at that screen, Gaza is in the mid to lower left, right on the edge of what? The Mediterranean Sea, is it not? Where is Jerusalem? You see that little section that cuts out into the hashed area? Right at the northern tip of that is where Jerusalem is. And he shall plant his tabernacle between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Where's the glorious holy mountain? It's Jerusalem. Gaza is on the sea and opposite of Jerusalem. It's very interesting. The Hebrew word here that is rendered as seas in the King James Version is actually not plural. This is the Hebrew word H3220, if you want to look it up in your Strong's Concordance. It's a noun masculine. Its definition is one sea. Subdefinition, what? The Mediterranean Sea. So it says that if this is a historical continual prophecy, it says that that Turkey, the Ottoman Empire, is going to come and plant its army between Jerusalem and the Mediterranean Sea. Between the seas and the sea and the glory, the Mediterranean and the glorious holy mountain. I didn't write this. It's what it says. But it says that he shall come to his end and none shall help him. So is he going to win? Boy, for Turkey's sake, I wish Erdogan would read this prophecy this way. It's interesting that he's going about trying to do what right now? Make an alliance between himself and the other Muslim countries, but it says none shall help him. So this makes for some interesting watching, wouldn't you say? To see what happens. They might support him in principle, but when push comes to shove, if this is the correct interpretation of the scripture, they're not going to. He's going to be on his own. You remember his statement? What did he say? And if not, what? We will. In other words, though no one joins me, I'm going to do this. Erdogan is mad. And it's strange that he's so mad, isn't it? Like, it is a terrible thing that's been going on, but it's a terrible thing going on in a world full of terrible things going on. Why this? Why this hill? Well, God knows the end from the beginning, does he not? But this is a waymark. I don't want you to lose sight of in all this. This is a waymark. A waymark for what? What happens in verse 1 of chapter 12? You guys should know this, right? And at that time shall Michael stand up, that great prince, which stands for your people, and there shall be what? A time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, every one that shall be what? Found written in the book. There are implications beyond the fulfillment of a prophecy here for you and me personally. If this Daniel 11 prophecy is about, the last verse is about to be fulfilled, it means that immediately following it, we have Michael standing up. Who's Michael? Michael means he who is what God is. It's Christ. Where is Michael seated? Seated. nice verbs. That's what. Where's Michael seated? He's seated upon the mercy seat in heaven. In Hebrews, it says that he, when he entered to heaven, he took his, not the blood of bulls and goats, but his own most precious blood, and he sat down. And there he remains until his enemies are humbled and made a footstool under his feet. He's sitting on the mercy seat. That mercy seat is symbolic of the grace of God. When that mercy seat is vacant, mercy will no longer plead for sinners. That's what the typology teaches us. When that mercy seat is vacated, time's up. If this prophecy is about to be fulfilled, then what's following on its heels, brothers and sisters? The end of mercy. The grace of God has covered the entire world. He loves everyone. His blood was shed to make all of mankind right in his sight. But there comes a time when that blood will cease to speak. And then you and I will be before God what we actually are. Is this solemn or no? It's very solemn. Very solemn. Sure glad I know about the inheritance. I'd be freaking out if I didn't. And people are freaking out. But the end of grace for this world is what follows. If you combine this with Revelation 13 and 17, you also know that other things are going to happen. Is that a waymark at all? I think it is. Let's watch, shall we? Will you guys watch? Are you kind of maybe keep an eye on this for a while? I think it'd be a good idea. Therefore, we, receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire. It's a solemn, I mean, you know, talking about surreal, you know that Jesus is coming, but you know what, folks? One of these days, it's really going to happen. And he said it's going to happen, and it's going to happen as a surprise. This is just like, wow. Is Daniel 11 about to be finished? We'll see. I think it very well may. It very well may be. The very next thing after that is the time of trouble, the end of probation. It's solemn, but it's not hopeless. It's not hopeless. But we need to know what God has promised. We need to know how it is that God can stand up and his blood can cease to cover you and I who are sinners. And as Jude says, James says that we offend in many things, all of us. We need to know it. This is important. It's no coincidence that the gospel of the kingdom is preached in a way I think it's never been preached before, just before Jesus returns. It's not, Shauna, when I shared this with, she got a little bit freaked out. It's like, what? What? I was like, this time I didn't say that as soon as the prophecy was fulfilled, that immediately probation closed. Don't let me think that I'm saying that. But that's the next thing that's going to happen. Very, very shortly after this, the very next historical continual event that happens is that Christ stands up in heaven. It's solemn. It's important. Very interesting. Watch ye therefore. What do you do, right? Well, here's some good advice. Watch you therefore and pray always that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. How are we ever going to be worthy to do that? Only by the grace of God. Only by a gift of inheritance that you and I don't have, but that you and I and everyone else that is found to be God's true child is promised. That's how it's to happen. So watch and pray once in a while. No, always, right? That you may be accounted worthy in Christ to escape all these things that are coming. It's not a bad thing. It's really solemn, though. So watch, right? Watch. It'll be an interesting next, however, I don't know how long this is going to play out, how long it's going to take. To know that, that Turkey sent its navy into the Mediterranean, though, and the U.S. has moved its navy, I think, two task forces now into the Mediterranean, is it? It ain't a recipe for peace and daisies, you know, like, it's not good. But God keep us, watch, see what happens. If you see these things come to pass, you can know that the time has come when probation is to close. You know, that's an interesting, the probation, as far as the covenant or the testament that Christ wrote as an inheritance for us, the word probation, those of you who have read what I've written on it, is interesting. It's a process by which a will is executed. It means that time is coming to an end, which also implies that the judgment of who is and who is not a child of God must be almost up too. And that's a solemn thought. But it's encouraging too, because if you're afraid, you may not be. Nobody yet living is born themselves. So you can go to God and ask him. And he who comes to me, I will in no wise cast out. And it also means that the horror that's going on in this world, that just, you can't hardly watch it because it breaks your heart. Doesn't it? I mean, it's like, what's going on? The sadness and the death and the twisting of people's minds, and it's almost over. It's just about done. And that's good. That's good. But it's also solemn. So may God bless you, and I pray that you'll watch. Watch with me, and let's see what happens. We live in fascinating times. I pray that God will bless you.